Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. Also here from the Swiss Re side, welcome to our third quarter 2014 results conference call. I'm here with Matt Weber, our Group Chief Underwriting Officer. So just a few comments before we open it up for Q&A. I'll try to keep them brief. As you know, I'm pleased to report that during the quarter, the group continued its strong performance with a positive contribution from all three of the business units. Q3 group net income was $1.2 billion, bringing us to a total net income for the first 9 months of $3.3 billion. We consider this a strong demonstration of our resilience in a challenging market environment. P&C Re's combined ratio was 76.7 for the quarter, driven by an expense benefit and lower impact from Nat Cat than we would typically expect. Combined ratio for the first 9 months of the year was 82.7%. Life and Health Re delivered an improvement in the operating margin to 9.2% in the quarter, supported by profitable new business and better than expected mortality experience in the Americas. In the third quarter, we closed one YRT transaction. Meanwhile, we've made substantial progress in our negotiations with other clients associated with our pre-2004 business in the U.S. During the fourth quarter of 2014, we expect to conclude these negotiations and anticipate booking a pre-tax U.S. GAAP charge of approximately $550 million. These negotiations, once finalized, are expected to support higher earnings for Life and Health Re going forward and will contribute to achieving our return on equity target of 10 to 12% for the segment by 2015. Corporate Solutions profitably grew net premiums earned by 14.2%, and Admin Re generated strong gross cash of $142 million in the quarter. Due to Admin Re's sale of Aurora, we expect an after-tax GAAP loss of less than $200 million in Q4 2014 and an EVM profit of a similar order of magnitude. I'm also very happy with our investment performance. The group fixed income running yield was 3.2% for Q3. For the full year, we're still expecting 3.3%. And finally, our group SST ratio of 249%, this is as submitted to FINMA at the end of October, remains strong and has increased from 241% as reflected in our previous SST submission. So without further ado, let me turn to Q&A. As usual, housekeeping comment, I would ask everyone to please restrict themselves to two questions each and re-register for follow-up questions. Operator, may we please take the first question?
Is from Mr. Thomas Seidel, Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon, everyone. Maybe two questions. One on the reserve side. We noted, of course, you increased reserve for New Zealand. Net of this, you would have released, if my calculation is correct, 7.7%. Seems a bit high given the comments from your predecessor that we should expect lower reserve release going forward. I just wonder if you could give us some guidance or how this is playing out in future. And secondly, I'd like to hear from Matt. I think he's also on the phone. If there's any, you know, changes in view on 2015 and 16 based on the Baden-Baden discussions on reinsurance pricing.
Okay, Thomas, thank you. So indeed, I'll take the first question and then Matt will come in with the second. So in terms of forward-looking guidance on reserves, let me just restate also, I'm sure my predecessor also said, which is that we reserve on a best estimates basis. We try to take every quarter a good thorough review across the entire book and look to see what our experiences have been and whether or not there's a reason to change any of our assumptions around those best estimates. You know, the fact of the matter is and has been now for several years, to be honest, that we're experiencing significantly lower level of inflation than we originally costed, and the actual volume of claims coming in is somewhat lower than we would expected, and obviously in a number of important markets there's been some significant changes in the overall legal environment, which has led to a lower level of claims and payments as well. So these are trends that have clearly impacted our previous year's results and has been reflected in some of the prior year positive development that you've seen. In terms of forward looking, I think it would be appropriate for me to also repeat something that we've said before. It remains true today as well, and that is we don't forecast positive or negative development for that matter, so we do reserve on a best estimate basis. The fact of the matter is we've seen continuing positive developments across the industry. It doesn't really surprise us given the continuation of the broad macro environment that I just described to you. If that environment were to continue, then it wouldn't surprise us if you would continue to see some reserve releases going forward as well. I do hope everyone appreciates, however, that at a certain point in time, the bucket of prior year reserves will be less empty than it has been in the past, and therefore we would certainly expect those prior year developments to decrease in magnitude. So let me turn it over to Matt.
Maybe a follow-up question. Those reserve releases, are they more related to the 2004, let's say 2009 range, and more recent years provide less opportunity? Is that a fair comment?
No, I think it would be fair to say that most of our prior years, not just a specific range, are driving this. There may be one or two specific years where we don't see it, but I think it's probably fair to say it's fairly broad-based. Mm-hmm. Matt, you want to pick up the second question?
Okay. So, hi, Thomas, Matt Eber speaking. Let me first start on the insurance side. There, the outlook, starting with property, is prices have been decreasing, and we believe this trend will continue. There will, of course, always be some exceptions related to individual segments and related, of course, also to loss-affected accounts. But on average, we see a downwards trend there in the U.S. and also in a good number of markets outside of the U.S. With respect to casualty, it is different. U.S. casualty right now looks reasonably stable, maybe still slightly up. And on the specialty side, it is a little bit a mixed bag. It really depends on the line of business. We see some moderate softening in the engineering line and also with respect to marine business. But related to aviation business, for instance, we are seeing a market that is about to stabilize and could even turn upwards a little bit after the number of losses we have seen in 2014. On the reinsurance side, with respect to proportional business, of course, it's pretty much the same picture. And on the non-proportional side, I can add Nat Cat. We believe the downwards trend will continue to evolve. However, we believe the rate of decreases will be slowing down. And the reason is, depending on the renewals, we have already seen in some cases one round of decreases, in other cases two rounds of decreases. And secondly, if we look at the evolution of the spreads in the insurance-linked security market as a indicator for what's going to happen on the traditional reinsurance side, their spreads have been more or less stable for several months now in a row. So short of the long, we expect to see some decreases, but not as large ones as we have seen in the last one or two renewal rounds.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Next question from Michael Huttner, JP Morgan. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Two questions. So, I met with one of your colleagues in Monte Carlo, the impression I had, and maybe he didn't say that, is that 2015 earnings would be below 2014. I had the impression it was a clear statement, but you know, it's just me, so who knows? And looking at the numbers now, so you've done 3.55, I think, billion, 3.45 billion to date. All the negatives which come in fourth quarter, so the 550 million, the 200 million, and if I normalize earnings, you're about 800 to 900 million. So it's not a lot of extra earnings to come. So the full year looks more or less like 9 months. So is that still a fair understanding that profits would be down from current levels, or It was my understanding it was said, so that's why I raised the question. And the second one is, what is the benefit to earnings of the 550 million of YRT recaptures? Thank you.
Mike, I'm going to have to acknowledge I didn't really understand the second question, so let me address the first one, and then I'll wrap back around and see if I can pick up your second question again. I don't know who you're speaking with or what exactly was said, but it strikes me as rather surprising that someone from Swiss Re would give an indication of profit levels for 2015. Of course, we can talk about 2014, and we see some of the things that have contributed to the overall level of results that we're reporting 9 months to date. And some of those we would clearly recognize as being lower level of benign and nat cat relative to what we would expect. There's some prior year positive development. So those types of things are out there. We know about them. But I don't think we've made a habit, nor will we start that today, of predicting profits for next year. So let me just be clear about that. In terms of the second question, if you don't mind repeating it, you were asking about YRT,
but I didn't... So you've got the 550 million kind of for Q4, the cost of these recapture deals, and I just wanted to know what the benefit was in terms of higher earnings after that.
Yeah, so as some of you know from our prior discussions, we're trying to be a little bit careful about how much detail we provide at this point in time, given the fact that these are negotiations with important clients, and some of them may be listening in as well, or if not listening in, they'll no doubt read certain things. So we don't want to undermine our own position, of course, in these discussions. Suffice it to say that when we announced in July 2013 that we had four major areas that we wanted to address in order to improve the underlying performance of our life and health reinsurance business, this was clearly one of the major areas. Now, we've reported to you along the way the progress that we've been making across all four of those levers. So just to remind, getting the right capital through some capital extraction, working on the leverage of the business, improving the asset mix, of course, continuing to write profitable new business, and certainly not least, if last, addressing this pre-2004 business, particularly the business that we recaptured from Berkshire Hathaway. Now, we've made good progress there. We've already agreed with a number of clients actions related to that business. We anticipate now bringing all of those negotiations with those clients to a conclusion in Q4. And it's on the basis of our current expectation that we recommit to that target of 10 to 12% ROE in 2015.
And that's for 2015, the 10 to 12%?
Correct.
Okay, lovely. Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next question from Andrew Ritchie, Autonomous. Please go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi there. One first question for Matt. Matt, just on casualty, do you still see as interesting an opportunity to keep growing in casualty lines, or has there been any sort of deterioration in pricing? And linked to that, is there any mix effect yet in the reported combined ratio from the growth in casualty, or is that yet to earn through? Because obviously the proportion's gone up, but I just wonder if that's affected the combined ratio yet. Second question for David. On capital deployment, I was a bit surprised looking at the evolution of SST that the required capital had barely moved. Maybe if you just give us a sense as to what the moving parts there. My working assumption is that you have deployed more capital organically for things like the Berkshire quota share, some organic growth at renewals, some small M&A, but that's been offset by the changes on asset allocation, particularly the sale of equities. And I'm not sure if the closing of the short duration position has also had a reduction in required capital, or is that yet to come through? So I'll just clarify why there isn't more inflation of required capital from organic growth would be helpful. Thanks.
Okay. Andrew, thanks for your question. I believe I recognize the question from last quarter, where you asked a very, very similar one. So absolutely, from our perspective, we will continue to look at casualty business on the reinsurance side, especially on the proportional side in the US. where we feel that the business right now is meeting our technical requirements. You know, we manage the business in EVM, but also under US GAAP accounting rules. If we take into account expected loss ratio, the duration, the risk-free interest rate, the capital leverage we have, and the investment income we can earn above risk-free, this business meets or exceeds our return on equity target of 700 basis points above risk-free. With respect to the 2014 combined ratio guidance of 95%, the business mix which we have been achieving so far this year is very close to the business mix we at the beginning of the year actually predicted we would be able to achieve, and the prior year business is anyway already in our book, so we know that business mix exactly, and the current year combined ratio guidance is 100% in line with the portfolio we currently have in our book, be it from 2014 or from prior year. With respect to future years, of course, it's way too early to even start thinking about how could the combined ratio look like. So we will do this in February 2015, when we have the 2014 year.
Okay, but it's fair to say there's more mix effect to come then, really, I guess.
Sorry, could you repeat, please? I did not understand it.
If there hasn't really been any meaningful mix effect yet, then that is yet to come, given the relative growth of casualty gross written year to date versus property.
No, there has been. If we compare the combined ratio this year with the combined ratio last year, of course, there has been a mix impact on the combined ratio, and that's one of the reasons why this year's combined ratio is higher than last year's combined ratio. It's not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons, but it has been fully taken into account already.
Okay, thanks.
Andrew, let me pick up your other question regarding the developments in SST. So just very simplistically, you know, there are two numbers to look at, the risk-based capital and the target capital. And what's happened between our April report and our October report is, frankly, that our risk-based capital has increased at a higher level, about 6%, versus an increase in the required capital, target capital, by about 3%. Now, the reason for that is as follows. Basically, we've seen net asset values driven by the positive results have increased across all segments. In terms of the target capital there, we do see a little bit of a higher group shortfall, so reflecting the fact that we are investing in our writing new business. And that's offset somewhat by changes in life and health as well as credit risk, and this is following the rules of FINMA. In terms of the second part of your question, so indeed part of what we've done in rebalancing our assets over the course of this year, so not so much what happened in Q3, but what happened during the course of Q1 and Q2, has reflected in a little bit of a lower capital requirement coming off the asset side. I would expect, as a result of the further reduction in equities in Q3, as well as the closing of the short during the course of Q3, that would have a positive impact on required capital levels, i.e., would lead to a lower level of required capital.
And that's not yet reflected in this number that you filed end October?
That's correct.
Right. So that would be the short duration closing and the Q3 equity sales?
That's correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Next question from Vinit Malhotra, Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi there. Good afternoon. I just wanted to get a little bit more understanding of when I look at either 9 months or whether I look at 3Q, the underlying combined ratios adjusted for the tax impact and seasonality are still beating the 95 target, if you like. And if you don't mind, just please shed some light on how what's driving that, how which areas are outperforming. And second question is just on the recapture loss, the YRT recaptures. I was half expecting that some of these negotiations also lead to losses, and you did announce earlier there was a conclusion of a negotiation on 1st July. Is it that you're going to decide and take a charge all in one go, or was it expect, or should we, is that how we should think about it, or why was there no charge at all in third quarter is my simple question. Thanks.
Okay. I will take the first question, and the second question will go to David Cole. Your 9-month combined ratio question. So on the reinsurance side, the actual 9-month combined ratio so far has been 82.7%. We experienced a below expected nat cat activity. We experienced also prior year development. If we correct for these two elements, we arrive at 92.8%. And if on top of this we make an adjustment mentally for the release of the Asian tax provision, that adds another 1.3% on top of this, you will see that we are actually very much on track towards achieving our combined ratio guidance.
Sorry, isn't it 95, Matt? Wasn't it 95? There's still a 1 point better. I'm just trying to see where it is better, in your view.
Yeah, yeah. So look, if you're a little bit better than the guidance, it's a kind of a high-class problem to have. Please do not forget that our business has some volatility. We are trying to address the biggest sources of volatility by pointing them out, prior year development, nat cat, etc. But in addition to that, there is also man-made large loss activity and other smaller sources of volatility. So being 1% point off, that's just the nature of our business. It has happened in the past, and it will happen again. And if we are a little bit lower than we expected, we actually take it with pleasure.
Of course. Thanks very much, Matt.
Okay, Vina, let me address the second question regarding the impact of the negotiations with our clients around this pre-2004 YRT business. So we're talking about a relatively limited number of clients and a relatively limited number of treaties. Having said that, each individual block is a little bit different. And so we've approached these discussions with our clients looking at the individual blocks of business and the cash flows associated with them. And we're basically conducting these negotiations on the basis of getting, of course, as you would expect, the best outcome for the shareholders of Swiss Re, looking at things from an economic point of view. So not being driven by the GAAP aspect per se. We certainly have it in our mind, but we're really conducting these discussions, negotiations, on the same basis that we steer the firm, which is clearly driven by the economic view of the cash flows. Now, as I think we've indicated in the past, not all of the agreements that we'll reach with clients will be in the form of recaptures. Some of them will be in the form of repricing. We've also said we don't want to get into individual discussions about the individual transactions. I don't think that's in our interest to do, but you can bear in mind that not all of the agreements will lead to GAAP hits. Some of them will simply lead to an improvement in the underlying operating performance.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Next next question from Frank Kopfinger, Commerzbank. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, everybody. I have two questions. My first question is on your gross cash generation in the admin re-segment. So after 9 months, you already report a 650 million contribution. And with this, I regard you as being well ahead of your 2016 target of 900 million. So should we expect that you have to increase your target there at some point, or that the cash generation going forward will rather dry out? And my second question is on your asset allocation, where you shifted the 8.6 billion into government bonds, and you almost brought back your short position to a neutral position overall. And the question is, did you overall change your view of rising interest rates?
Okay, thanks. Well, let me first talk about cash generation at Admin Re. Of course, we've been very pleased with the overall level of cash generation in 2014. You quoted the number 615 through the 9 months. In terms of our overall guidance, I think it's a little bit premature to talk about increasing the expectation over the course of the three-year period. So we always talked about 900 million over the course of 3 years. I think it would be fair to say we'll be coming back to this in February. I think we've been pleased with the results that our management actions have achieved so far, and we continue to have a number of ideas about ways we can continue to improve the performance of the business. In the first instance, of course, looking very closely at cash generation, as well as looking at the overall ROE. So I think we've been satisfied with the performance. Some of it is a little bit of a timing issue. It's too early to adjust that guidance, but we'll come back to it in February. As for the second question, so indeed, part of the increase in government bonds was associated with reducing our short position. So you see now we're about 2.6 million. DVO1, which we would classify as, frankly, a typical position. It's not strategic in any shape or form. In addition to closing the short, of course, we also just did a periodic update of our liability portfolio and sought to do a normal matching. To the point of our expectation on interest rates, we still expect interest rates to rise, but we now believe that that increase will perhaps take place a little bit more slowly and perhaps a little bit later than we had previously thought. And we simply have come to the conclusion that it no longer makes sense, economic sense, for us to hold that short position. It's just a fairly straightforward calculation. I would like to remind everyone, when you think about the short, to realize that we put it on in conjunction with the overall rebalancing of our portfolio. So we thought it would position us in a very appropriate way to respond to different market circumstances. And I have to say we've been very happy with the way that overall rebalancing has taken shape and has contributed to our results.
Okay, thank you.
Next question from Kamran Hossain, RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, I've got two questions. The first one is just thinking about business mix in the P&C reinsurance business. Well, how should we think about the catastrophe loss load due to the business mix change? So I assume that should have come down. So what should we think about that on an ongoing basis? And the second one is on corporate solutions. Just looking at kind of the underlying performance of the business, it looks a little bit disappointing kind of versus where you wanted to be at the beginning of the year. Could you just give us a bit of colour on what's going on there and kind of what you think needs to be changed in order for it to get a little bit better? Thanks.
Okay. So with respect to your first question, the cat loss load for our entire book this year is $1.45 billion for the full year on an accident year basis. And this is, of course, distributed across the individual quarters. according to a key that is non-linear. On the insurance side, for instance, we have 25% during the first quarter, 15% during the second, 35% during the third quarter, and the remaining 25% in Q4. With respect to next year, of course, it is too early to make any predictions or give any indications at all with respect to what next year's business mix is going to look like, also including the total amount of Nat Cat business we are going to write. On the corporate solutions side, actually, the combined ratios we have been seeing so far, or the deviation of the combined ratio we have been seeing so far relative to our guidance can be explained by two things. And here now I talk the adjusted combined ratio after taking it into account good luck on the Nat Cat side and some prior year development. So the additional factors are man-made, large losses and expenses. Man-made large losses, and please remember our business is volatile. Sometimes we experience good luck and sometimes we experience the opposite. But if we look at the first 9 months, the man-made large losses are a little bit above our expectations. And this amounts to approximately 2.3 combined ratio points, and in addition to that, our expenses are a little bit higher than we were predicting last year, and the reason is that some of the investments we were planning to do in the future in high growth markets, for instance, we made them a little bit earlier in 2014 already, and that's the reason why the cost ratio there is a little bit higher. If we correct the combined ratio for these two elements, we are absolutely aligned with our guidance of 95%.
If I may just briefly add to that, that's actually also the reason that in my comments earlier this morning, I made it clear that as the group CFO, I'm actually pleased with the overall developments of Corporate Solutions. It remains on track. I think we're trying to grow in a very intelligent way, so we're focusing on profitable growth, focusing on increasing our capabilities. I think if you look at the 9-month return on equity at 12.2%, it's also an indication the business is certainly delivering its contribution to the overall results of the group. So I can appreciate the question looking at the quarter's numbers, but I have to say, looking at the way that business continues to develop and the opportunities we see more broadly in the corporate solution space, we remain comfortable, even pleased with the way that business is developing.
Can I just come back on the first question? It's more kind of theoretical. If I'm, my model, I'm assuming a percentage of catastrophe losses as a percentage of net earned premium in my model. With your, without thinking about what your business mix looks like next year, if I assume that your business mix changes more towards liability than property, then is it a safe assumption on that basis that your catastrophe load should come down? Is kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, so you from the information I gave you, you know what our, for instance, our Nat Cat expected loss to P&C premium ratio is in 2014. And if next year, if we shifted more capital from property to casualty, that would automatically, of course, mean that the future ratio between Nat Cat expected loss relative to the total P&C premium reduces a little bit. Of course, you also need to correct for rate changes, which distort the whole picture a little bit.
That's great. Very clear. Thanks.
Okay.
Next question from Olivia Brinzer, Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, madam.
Hi there. So two questions. Firstly, just going back to the underlying combined ratio, sorry, looking at this in a slightly different way. If I take your reported loss ratio, back out all the cat losses, all the large man-made losses, and add back reserve releases, so in other words, a sort of pure current year underlying loss ratio, you're at 50%, which is extremely good, and it's also, you know, exactly the same as you had in 3Q last year. If I look at the second quarter of this year, again, it's exactly flat on where you were in 2013. So in the last two quarters, basically, in spite of pricing pressure, you haven't seen, or it doesn't look like you've seen, any deterioration at all on that underlying loss ratio. And that just surprises me a little bit. So I'm wondering if there's, you know, any explanation you can give for that. Why have we not seen any worsening there? Because obviously that number is independent of the comments you've made on large losses and reserve releases. And then the second question is on capital again. Could you give us an update of the sort of now famous $3 billion? How much have you deployed of that so far in terms of supporting growth in the business? And therefore, I guess, how much remains in that pot? And feeding that into a broader question on capital, based on the SST ratio you've disclosed today and some of the comments you made earlier in the call, it seems like you're going to end up the year again with an extremely strong capital position, suggesting that probably there's further upside to the $3 billion of deployment. I guess I don't expect a precise answer to that, but if you could just give us a sense of how you're thinking about that sort of overall capital return. Thank you.
Okay. So, Olivia, I will take the first question. If you look at the combined ratio of the combined ratio for insurance, for instance, last year, the combined ratio guidance was 92%. This year, the combined ratio guidance is 95%. Last year, at the end of the year, if we correct for all these either good luck, bad luck factors, or prior year development, and here I would like to open a parenthesis, prior year development in my opinion is still underwriting profit. It's just underwriting profit from a different year when the business was written, but it has nothing to do with good luck or bad luck, and it also has nothing to do with a one-off, and therefore we can neglect it. It's really underwriting profit just from a different year. And now I close the parentheses. But last year we were quite close to our combined ratio guidance of 92%, and this year we believe if we make all these adjustments, we will end up reasonably close to this year's combined ratio guidance. Of course, you're right, the market is softening and there is market pressure. And it affects us also a little bit, and that's one of the reasons why our combined ratio guidance actually increased a little bit relative to last year. However, we are doing our utmost in order to actually stem against this pressure and decouple us a little bit from the market by offering deals which are extremely bespoke, which do not appear in the market, which therefore are not subject to the current demand supply of capital and capacity imbalance. We also are trying very hard to offer services, be a partner of strategic importance to our insurance clients on the insurance side, and monetize this. And maybe that contributes a little bit to the fact that our performance this year so far has been surprisingly good. It's a high-class problem to have.
Okay, let me then, Olivia, pick up your second question, and I actually appreciate you asking. It won't surprise anyone on the phone, I think, that we expected some sort of questions around capital management, certainly giving our performance and our overall capital position. So just a few things. As a firm, we would absolutely like to maintain a very strong financial position, and we've said exactly why that is. We want to be a partner of choice. We want to be able to take advantage of opportunities that develop from time to time in the market. And I think that's it's very clear that everyone understands that will remain the positioning of the firm. Our overall philosophy about capital management is also the same as it has been in our previous discussions. And that's also important because it's important to recognize that we're going to act in similar fashions going forward as we have in the past, which is that we want to make intelligent investments in our business, investments that fully fit within the strategy that we've communicated, and investments that provide an attractive return to our shareholders. And clearly, we've understood from our shareholders that's exactly what they would like for us to do as well. So we continue to invest in the ongoing sustainable profitability of the business. Now, as to the $3 billion that you refer to, let me just specifically address one word. There's not a pot, per se. I know you folks recognize this, but the $3 billion is just an order of magnitude. It reflects more or less what we did in 2012, 2013, and we've said, you know, we have no reason to think that 2014, 2015 will, per se, be different, so we just give it as an order of magnitude. More specifically to your question, at this point, I think we are about $750 to $800 million that we have allocated of this $3 billion. There are a couple of individual transactions that you're aware of. There's also just the ongoing organic underlying growth of our business. In terms of forward-looking statements, you're right. I'm not going to make a specific comment about any specific capital management actions. We'll come back to that in February. But our philosophy remains unchanged. We want to be consistent and obviously continue to work on building the credibility. And the credibility, I think, comes from making sure that we stay on track, making sure that we stay within strategy, and making sure that when we deploy capital, we're able to do so in a way that provides attractive return to shareholders. Now, we don't have a mandate to spend money. We have a mandate to run the business for long-term value creation. If we come to the conclusion at the end of the year that we're sitting on a level of capital that once again exceeds what we would like to have in terms of the long-term positioning of the company as a strong financial partner, and that more than covers a reasonable expectation of what we would think we could invest over a short, relatively short period of time, then we'll look for ways to return it to our shareholders.
That's clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question from William Hardcastle, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi there. Following on from Andrew's question earlier on the mix effect between casualty and property, are you able to give us any sort of quantum of the impact that's happened so far year to date? And also, just to clarify, we should expect further, more of this to flow through into 2015. I appreciate there's an investment income benefit as well that helps offset this. It's just thinking about the combined ratio specifically at this stage. And then, can I just clarify, ignoring the Nat Cat benefits, have the large man-made losses also been lower than what you'd normally expect year-to-date? You made a quick comment on that, Matt, but I wasn't sure if it's below budget year-to-date or not. Thanks.
Okay. So with respect to the business mix of the business we have written so far, we actually disclosed the statistics after the Q2 results. And since then, we have written very little business, additional business on the insurance side, because Q3 is just not a very big renewal quarter at all. And for 2015, it is really, believe it to me, it is too early to make a prediction. So I cannot give any guidance at all with respect to that. Related to your second question on large man-made losses for the first 9 months so far, if I understood you correctly, So relative on the reinsurance side, relative to our expectations, the man-made large loss activity on the insurance side has been a little bit below expected, and a little bit means half a percent point across the first three quarter. If we look at corporate solutions, there it is a little bit different. The man-made large loss activity has been a little bit above the expected value, and there the delta amounts to 2.3%. Point. And this is driven, for instance, in Q3 on the corporate solution side, we had a satellite loss of 58 million. We had a fire at the chemical plant of 41 million. We had another fire loss coming from Australia, 12 million, and a mining loss from Zambia of 10 million in US dollars. On the insurance side, the large loss activity, the man-made large loss activity, almost entirely took place in the space of aviation, the MH17, the plane in Taiwan, Algeria, for instance, and also the attacks and the fighting at the Tripoli airport led to an actual man-made large loss activity of 78 million US dollars in Q3 for reinsurance.
Very clear, thanks.
Next question from Stefan Schürmann, Bank von Tobel. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. Just two questions. First one, sorry to come back to the SST ratio, but can you just give us some the moving parts, you know, the impact from your rebalancing, the impact from like the financial markets, and as I understand, I think the subordinate debt had a positive impact of 3%. Then the second question, just very shortly on the basically new position on the duration management, are you happy with that position now, or should we expect further measures or action here?
So to the second question first, yes, I think it would be fair to say we're happy with the position. To be clear, we were happy with the position we were holding earlier as well. It was part of a strategic position taking that we had. The current DVO1 is what I would characterize is in more of a normal type of circumstance and positioning. It may go up a little bit, may go down a little bit on a quarter by quarter basis as our portfolio continues to develop and we write new business, and of course, existing business expires. So I would characterize our current position as a normal type of position. As to the first question, I don't want to get into really detailed discussion about each underlying driver of target capital or economic net worth. We reported an increase in economic net worth, of course, in conjunction with our report also to FINMA, our SST. I think the headline figures probably really covered. Our economic net worth grew higher than our required level of capital. Our required level of capital went up a little bit due to ongoing underwriting activities and went down a little bit due to financial market activities.
Okay. Thanks.
Next question from Vikram Gandhi, Societe Generale. Please go ahead, sir. Mr. Gandhi, your line is open. You can ask your question.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one is on the PNCD. Can you share some more details on what's going on with the casualty motor, where you said Q3 14 as well as Q3 13 included reserve strengthening in the UK motor? And I believe Q1 14 also had some French motor reserve strengthening. So if you can throw some light on whether this is the proportional business or the unproportional and what's going on with the pricing there. And the second question relates to the corporate solutions where you had unfavorable prior year reserve development with the casualty. So which line does it relate to and which vintage? Thank you.
Okay. So the first question related to motor on the insurance side. We had on the casualty side some favorable development related to general liability plus So $26 million there, and on the accident and health side, we had $37 million favorable development. On the motor side, we had an unfavorable development of $42 million. The majority of this is driven by the UK, and it is the old well-known UK periodic payment order issue there. On the corporate solutions side, we had some unfavorable development related to casualty business as well. And there it is actually just a higher number of small uncorrelated losses across a number of geographies and a number of policies. So it's not totally easy to come up with a common theme there, other than saying that this quarter we had a little bit a higher frequency of very small losses.
Maybe just to complete that, of course, that was offset by favorable development on the property side within Corso.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Next question from Andy Broadfield, Barclays. Please go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi, good afternoon. Just one question, really. We're at this stage of the cycle where it starts to get slightly mixed messages. We're seeing some very good ROEs, some of it by good fortune, but actually underlying it's still very good ROEs across the industry. And at the same time, we're being told pricing pressure is very hard, we're getting it very difficult. Your last rate index, I think, was about 107, 108%, indicating there's still plenty of room there. So I'm just trying to understand, perhaps it is the difference you mentioned between your direct proposition and the brokered business, but I'm just trying to understand a little bit more how much more flexibility there is on pricing for you as you move along. And I appreciate this will be a case by case, but as you think about the portfolio, it feels to me like you've got quite a lot of headroom still, or wiggle room on price on a portfolio basis. Is that the case? How are you thinking about it? Is it really very different across different parts of your portfolio, and how do you intend to present yourself to the market come January renewals?
So I cannot really comment on the market. We try very hard to beat the market. And in many quarters we have been successful, and we will try very hard to continue to be successful of doing it. You're absolutely right with your observation that we have some room left related to a technical walk away, and the room is different by different segments and different lines of business.
Okay, so no steer on where that particular wiggle room is. I guess what I'm asking is the direct business in really great shape, and the brokered business, if that's the crude split, is more at 100? Have you got a split of portfolio between 115 and 100, or is it actually reasonably tightly bound around that index level?
So right now, right forward looking, it's really too early to give to give any guidance at all. We will be able to give some guidance next February, but right now it is too early. Related to the direct versus broker split on the insurance side, approximately 50% of our business is written on a direct basis, 50% is written on a broker basis, and on the corporate solutions side, almost everything is written via the broker channel.
Okay, I guess we'll wait to see. Thank you.
Next question from Thomas Holzert, HSBC. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions, I guess, related for directed to David. The first question will be regarding, you know, the process for capital reorganization and extraction. Can you tell us where you stand currently on the process and basically what we should expect in or from 2015 onwards? Because I got in mind that the process was pretty much achieved for all the business line, but today you obviously you're bringing something new for the admin segment. So could you just wrap up where we are today and what we should expect going forward? And the second question would be related to your earlier comment regarding maybe a slightly a change in scenario regarding future interest rate evolution. You're guiding for a running yield of 3.3% for 2014, how things should be trending in 2015? Will that be, I would say, more or less stable, or we should expect some pressure on a full year basis? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let me first start with the target capital structure. So, indeed, this quarter we also have updated the overall situation regarding our capital structure, that in conjunction with our half-yearly report on our economic net worth. And you'll see that we've continued to make progress since our previous update, which was on the basis of our full year 2013 numbers. So the direction is as follows. Overall, we're seeking to further reduce leverage. You'll see that over the last couple of years, we've already reduced leverage quite significantly across the group. While we're reducing leverage overall, we're also seeking to rebalance it a little bit better across the different business units. Historically, we had almost exclusively used our reinsurance business where we had a leverage. And now we're putting a little bit of leverage on Admin Re and a little bit of leverage on Corporate Solutions. We think that also properly reflects, allows better comparisons with some of their peers, and also helps us address overall cost of capital, weighted average cost of capital in those business units. In terms of forward looking, I think if you look at what we said, we indicated that we would like to position our overall senior leverage within a range of 15 to 25, and as of June, we're about 22, so more or less in that range. On the subordinated and hybrid side, we said between 15 and 20%, and we tracked at 14% as of June. So there's maybe a little bit of room for us to increase that, to bring it also within the range. The time frame that we indicated was 2016. This is what we announced in the summer of 2013. We remain well on track to deliver that. I'm very happy with the way that has progressed. In terms of forward-looking, we want to be appropriate users of the capital markets and somewhat opportunistic in terms of taking advantage of our strength. So we continue to watch the market carefully. I would say you could expect overall a continued reduction in the total amount of leverage within the group, continuing balancing across the different business unit. Perhaps looking at it from an overall point of view, a little bit of a higher component of subordinated and hybrid going forward. In terms of your second question, indeed, our running yield expectation for 2014, frankly, has not changed throughout the year. In the first half of the year, we had a little bit of a higher running yield. That was due primarily to some prepayments on securitized investments that we held. So that drove the running yield in the first half of the year up a little bit above the 3.3. And Q3, you see that our running yield was 3.2. And we maintain our overall expectation for the year 2014 at 3.3. I guess it's that time of year where naturally you folks start wanting to think about 2015, but it's a little bit too early for us to start talking about 2015. So we'll come back with our expectation for running yield at a different date.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Next question from Jeanette van den Berg, Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead, madam.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Actually, my questions on leverage have been answered, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Next question from William Hawkins, KBW. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, thanks. Just a quick one. When you first carved out corporate solutions from the reinsurance division, I think legacy contracts meant that Corso was seeing an inflated combined ratio and presumably reinsurance was commensurately flattered. Have all of those relationships now unwound so that we're looking at clean figures, or is there any ongoing distortion from legacy contracts?
Thanks, William. Yeah, so when we carved it out, we did leave certain reserves behind. And I think it would be fair to say that as we go forward, of course, those reserves run off and it becomes less and less of an issue. It was for that reason that we stopped actually communicating about so-called total financial contribution at the end of last year. So there's still some residual component of that, but I think it's not something that is really worthy of spending a lot of time on. So we're reporting the corporate solutions business on a going forward basis. And look to assess their performance based on that.
Thanks.
Let me take one more question. I understand that some of you may have an interest in joining another call that apparently is taking place just a little bit from now, at least if I'm well informed. So let me just take one more call, and then we'll end the session.
The last question for today is actually a follow-up question from Mrs. Brindley from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead, madam.
Oh, thanks for taking the follow-up. Just a quick one. I was just wondering if you have any exposure to the U.S. long-term care market, so thinking obviously of the recent Genworth announcement and whether there's any kind of read-across at all for your business potentially.
Okay. So U.S. long-term care is a very difficult line to write. Historically, we wrote a little bit of it, and quite frankly, our experience was not absolutely fantastic, so a while ago we have stopped writing it. We still have a little bit reserves left, long-term care reserves left in our book, but it is absolutely immaterial, and right now we do not actively write this line of business. It is a big need of society, but it's potentially also very tricky for insurers to write it. And right now I feel we have not yet cracked the code related to coming up with a solution that addresses this need of society, a product that makes sense for both the insured as well as the insurer. And therefore we are keeping our hands off this exposure.
That's great, thank you.
Okay, well, listen, let me just thank everyone for joining today. Obviously, if you have any further questions, we'd be very happy to field them. If you would like to give our investor relations team a call, please do so. I think some of you may have picked up from earlier announcements. As of the 1st of January next year, we'll once again have a fully complete investor relations team. Philippe Brahim will join us as the new head of investor relations. I certainly look forward to continue working with Philippe and the rest of the team. So let me now conclude the Q3 analyst call. Once again, thanks everyone for participating, and we look forward to our next engagement.